Just to finish up from yesterday, there are a few more things to say about diagnosis. So just to finish up, after going through the whole thing, I then spent some time talking to the person about what I see in terms of their health. I don't explain a lot about Chinese medicine to people anymore. I very often don't even talk to them about their element or constitution or any of that. I tend to keep things just very directly about what's going on, what they're doing that they could change, how certain choices they're making are contributing to the problem, and how they could make other choices that could contribute to the solution. I take everything on a case-by-case basis. Sometimes when people go in, we go very, very deep, very quickly, and sometimes never. And that has more to do with where the person's at, because the invitation's always there to go deep. Some people who go very deep at first just don't follow up at all. They will have all kinds of insights the first time and all kinds of experiences and this and that, but when it comes down to making changes and really going further and really pushing into things, not much happens. And I always consider it my job, both through who I am and how I'm living and my value system and what I know, to offer the possibility to everyone who comes in to go as deep as they can. And, right, to show them that there's a great, great, great potential beyond which anything they might have construed or previously understood, and that there aren't any limits to it. So they can go, they can go much further perhaps than they imagined using the medicine. So things range from, like, the other day I got a call from a guy I've known a long time, who, if you talk to him, would consider himself a pretty serious spiritual practitioner. But he called and he said he was having allergies to his dog. And I said, well, you know, I've known you a long time and, you know, you're very damp and that comes from diet. So the main thing to do really is, you know, dairy and sugar, and we're going to have to look at your diet. And he said, well, frankly, I'm completely skeptical of things like that. I don't think they work. I already eat well enough, and I don't really think I'm willing to look at that. You know. So I said, okay. And he said, well, I'll wait to hear back from my doctor, and then I'll let you know if I'm interested. I said, okay. That's fine. So you see, people aren't necessarily as deep as they think they are. Right? I mean, everything comes down to how you're thinking about what you're doing. What's the motivation? Why are you doing it? So, how can you on the one hand be a spiritual practitioner, on the other hand take a completely egoic position in relationship to your own health and choose comfort? See, the thing is, these are vehicles. So the whole thing depends on how you're oriented toward medicine, right? So as a practitioner, if you're just seeing things in terms of syndrome patterns, eight principal syndrome patterns, it's very superficial, it's very relative, right? You're just looking at outer manner. So an eight principal practitioner would say that a physician who just looks at symptoms was being very superficial, right? And a five element practitioner would say that an eight principal person who just looks at syndrome patterns was being very superficial. But if you can see the authentic self and the ego, you'd say somebody's just looking at constitution and elements as being very superficial. And then if you're looking from the perspective of the absolute, which means you're really aligned with, you really experience your own life as being rooted in emptiness and aligned with the motives in living with the authentic self, you're going to see duality as being pretty superficial. Even the duality of the authentic self and emptiness. You're going to say, well, these things are just one. Well, it all depends. So you're going from symptoms, which would be the most outer thing, to eight principal syndrome patterns, which is just the physics underlying the manifestations of the symptoms. And then the five elements would look at the eight principal syndrome patterns as being superficial, because it's really, those are just compensations for the constitution. But then you step back to the center of the circle and you're going to see the five element syndrome, five element constitution and all those issues as being pretty superficial. All relative. So what I'm trying to teach you to do is to look at your own life and to look at life itself and as the context for medicine from an absolute perspective. So you're always looking what's absolutely true, what's absolutely possible. What is the absolute position in relationship to everything? What's the absolute call for more integrity, for more humility, for more and greater perspectives, for more selflessness, for more of a wholesome motive, right? Could always be more, could always be more. So we look from this absolute perspective. If you're looking from the absolute perspective, you don't want to become arrogant just because you can see from it. It's very easy to say, I can see from this perspective, so I am this perspective. Just being able to see through those eyes doesn't mean anything about you. Because we all have the God-given ability to see through those eyes if we get our own conditioning out of the way. But seeing through the eyes of the absolute only makes a difference to the degree we're striving to have integrity with that. Right? So when I was talking to people yesterday, see, my fundamental assumption is this, going into the treatment room and in human relationship. Human beings are a vehicle for the evolution of consciousness. There is only one consciousness in this universe. And everything else is it. All differences. All perceived differences that cause separation. Not all differences, because there are clearly differences between men and women, right? So there are some differences, but all differences that would be the grounds for separation are just an illusion. So when I'm diagnosing a patient, I'm diagnosing to what degree is this person awakened to the motives of consciousness itself. And the operant principle is that to the degree a person is awakened to the pure motivation of consciousness itself, to create the future, to create integrity, having no problem, rooted in emptiness, but exploding into the present with a wholesome direction, to create integrity in all relationship, to bring relationships together, to dispel the illusion of separation with everything it touches, I want to see to what degree is a person awakened to that, and what's in the way, and everything in the way is ego. There's nothing else, there's no other obstacle but ego. Ego is it. And so there's an absolute perspective. In this degree, every patient is the same. And I also know that congealed blood and the presence of dampness and the presence of wind and deficient qi and any of the syndrome patterns represent impurities in the vehicle, acquired karma, but none of them are impediments to the realization of anything I'm talking about. So there's sort of, is it that the person's ignorant and therefore they've embodied congealed blood or their syndrome pattern, and then the syndrome pattern itself is perpetuating the ignorance? Okay, that's all true, but it's a relative perspective. So what I'm trying to do for myself is cultivate the skill and the insight through my own depth of who I am as a human being for the quality of consciousness that I'm transmitting to people through every word and every act to be the vehicle for the awakening of their own consciousness prior to their own mind's beliefs and prior to their own physiology. And medicine is in service of that. So it's that basis in who we actually are. Not in terms of the theory and our self-image as spiritual people and all that pretense. Not in terms of intellectually everything we know about systems theory, but actually is given by the amount of integrity I really have is determined by what price I'm actually willing to pay for it. For the sake of my patients and my family and the kind of kids I want to raise, the kind of students I want to have. See, so there's a big obligation to everything else. And it is absolutely true that to the degree I have self, that I'm self-referencing, and that I'm self-absorbed and worried about my problems, because God knows I have problems. We all have problems. From an egoic point of view, I don't have it nearly as good as I'd like to. Right? From the point of view of ego. And the thing is, one just arrives at a place when one gets serious where one doesn't care anymore. And when I find myself engaging in that kind of self-referencing, I relate to it as a sin because I actually know that it's going against everything I'm committed to in my heart of hearts and everything I'm putting out and everything I'm teaching. So I literally can't afford to do it anymore. And when I do it, I just have to be hands off. So what does renunciation mean in the 21st century? Does it mean having no house? Does it mean having no sex? Does it mean not earning a living? The thing, look, there's nothing wrong with sex. There's nothing wrong necessarily, right? And there's nothing wrong with earning a living. And there's nothing wrong with owning a home. But it's all a question of priorities, and I think what the real renunciation is renouncing all this self-referencing. I mean, right? Because you can be a monk and be proud for 50 years. You can be a monk and just be a monk to avoid having to balance your checkbook. I mean, I know a lot of people who've chosen these spiritual paths and are not very functional in the world. And they just did it as to lead a simple life and have someone tell them what to do every second. And so, I mean, there's not necessarily God in any of that. But the real thing is, what does it mean to be in the world and be very, very serious spiritual practitioners with real integrity? But my whole life, there was something that always sickened me about New Age everything. And I never really knew quite what it was. And I was always interested in consciousness, and I always saw it as kind of killing consciousness. And the thing is, I think the ultimate position to take is one has to become the kind of person who challenges people's cynicism to its very core about the highest that's possible for humanity. So we've all had, there's a dream deepest in each person's heart, a longing, and it's the same thing in everybody's heart. The deepest longing in everybody's heart is to live with integrity and to be liberated, to be free, so that we can actually fulfill our joint destinies by being vehicles for the pure expression of that which put us here. And that's the secret. That's the deepest longing in everybody's heart. Beyond all cultural stories, beyond all the cultural stories and myths and superstitions. So beyond that, there's this impulse, this urge, this longing for freedom. Not the personal freedom of expression, like I can do whatever I want, but for this greatest possible expression. And then the thing is, to give oneself to that, one becomes, when one is transmitting that, it becomes very difficult for other people to maintain their cynicism in the front of it, because you're actually becoming it. But there's a price to pay to do that. There's a big price to pay to do that, both in terms of losing friends and in terms of being a subject of ridicule. And then everybody sits around and waits for you to... It's not that there isn't a part of me that wouldn't love to do it. Do you understand? From an egoic point of view. But think about Obama right now, right? What would it mean if we all got up tomorrow and it turned out that he was having an affair with one of his campaign workers through the whole election? It would be devastating, right? Just say, oh my God. And we'd like to think that he recognizes his obligation. He has the possibility to destroy people's cynicism, which he's done so far, right? And we can all experience it's liberating, right? Here's a guy who might actually sacrifice his own male ego and all the power. He might sacrifice its fears and desires for the greatest good. So the thing is, even if he doesn't do that, I still have to do it. You see? And so what I'm saying is, if we can each reach a place of where we're really serious about doing this, what more can we do? Is there anything more we can do? And then if we're in that place, then it makes sense to learn different. If you're in that place that I'm talking about, you could study with, you know, Richard Tan or Giovanni or anyone or anything. You could do facial acupuncture, anything you wanted to do that turned you on. But it would be an expression of something wholesome and integrating. So if the main force that a person's aligned with in this life is not integrating, they cannot practice holistic integral medicine, no matter how much systems theory they understand. And if the predominant force in a person's life is inertia and cynicism in the face of their heart's own highest aspirations, it just doesn't matter if they can read classical Chinese, or they're experts on the Shanghan Lun, or how much they study with Ken Wilber, or how many spiritual retreats they make, or how much money they give to Greenpeace. None of it matters. It doesn't matter how much they meditate, none of it's going to matter. The point is to get very serious, minimally, about having absolute integrity to whatever teaching you happen to be in. Right? So I've never put pressure on anybody to like come study with my teacher. The invitation's always opened. All I care more about is people having absolute integrity to the perspective I'm talking about, to what they're actually doing. And taking it seriously. Because for too many people, it's just a big self-image. You know, I do this, and I do that, and I'm with this. For most people, being with a teacher is just a big ego trip. Look at all the graduate, the people with J.R. Worsley. I post these articles on the TAI News Group, and I get these letters back like, there's nothing, someone wrote in, there is no revolution, nothing's happening, like, go back to sleep and get in your pod. JR did it all. How cynical is that? He did a dead guy did it all. Well, good. We can all go back to sleep. The dead guy did it all. There is nothing new. So, I mean, we're all responsible for this. There isn't a person in this room who couldn't make as significant a contribution to the medicine as I've made, whatever that happens to be. It's just a question of how much you care. I mean, not everyone would do it in a scholarly way. Right? I mean, there would be very many different expressions of it. It's good to be able to articulate what we do, because then we can communicate it to other human beings. Everything is about relationship. Everything is about relationship. Values change through human relationship. What I'm hoping for in this new news group is that by bringing more and more and more people into the conversation, they'll read and they'll get a little interested and a little stimulated. And values will transmit, right? That's why I'm going to all this effort. Daniel says, God, how do you do all this? Well, I do it because I care. Nothing could be more important. What are we here for? Anyway, are we here to like fund our 401ks and retire so we can travel a lot? Oh, I can't wait to go to Paris and eat good food and just sit out there and drink and not have to worry about any of these bleeding sufferers. I mean, is that what? I'm working really hard as an integral healer so I can get to a point where I won't have to do this stuff anymore. I mean, the goal would be like to live a long, healthy life and give up till the day you die. Right? So, and financial security isn't in the way of that. So if you happen to make good money and you have enough money in the bank, that'll put you in a secure position. So you won't have to think about money and you can be really generous. And as an expression of gratitude for the privileged position we've had. So this, everything I've just said, this is the background on diagnosis. Okay? And I want, to what degree is a person living a life that's an expression of these values and this level of gratitude? We all try to fix, where am I really? So we look at the syndrome patterns. What's my syndrome pattern? What's my element? What's my astrological sign? What's my mimetic structure? And we're all trying to figure out where we are to fix a place so we can really understand. And the thing is, we really don't know. When you reach a certain level of maturity, you realize there is no fixed self. The self is a process. It's constantly evolving. So surely we all in this room have some experience beyond ego. Some experience beyond ego, right? I mean, if you didn't have experience beyond ego, you would have left halfway through the first morning. So we all have some experience beyond ego. We all have some experience of holistic integral thinkers. We all have some, a very large part, we're mostly green meme egalitarian narcissists, right? And then we have, you know, orange entrepreneurship, right? And understanding of science. And we have some blue meme absolutism, even if that only comes out as rooting for a baseball team, right? I mean, you know, I couldn't relate to the Americans winning during the Olympics, but if the Mets or the Yankees or the Red Sox are in a World Series, I mean, I can at least sit there and feign having some investment in the outcome, right? Not that I really ultimately care, but I can watch the Super Bowl every year, and I sit down and I go like this. Go, okay, I'll take the guys in the black jerseys. And I can sit there for 2 hours rooting for the guys in the black jerseys and stick with them. What my 9-year-old son will do is he'll root for the guys in the black jerseys until they're 1 point down, and then he switches his affiliation. Like, no, Zeph, you gotta stay with your guys. You don't just go with who's ever winning in that minute. Right? And we all have, like, you know, and then there's a tribal level. So, for instance, at the tribal level, after the Pacific Symposium, I went over Zev's house, Zev Rosenberg, and there were 7 or 8 Jews having dinner together, which, I mean, I'm never together in the room with that many Jews. And I could feel a real warmth and a kind of sympathetic resonance with the people there. And I said, oh, this is interesting. I think this is sort of a tribal kind of, you know, blood level affinity. You know, so, okay, so I can experience that. And then, you know, beneath that, I'm certainly aware of when I need to go to the bathroom, and if I'm too cold, I need heat. So that's sort of like snake brain, right? It's cold, I need to get out on the rock that's retaining heat. Oh, now it's too hot out here. I think I need to get back under in the shade. I can relate to that. So we have all these different levels within us, and I want to understand those levels within my patients and where they're choosing. What are they identified with? It's a question of identity. And spiritual practice means willfully putting our attention on the cutting edge of our development. On the cutting edge of our development. And shifting our identification to that. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, so it may be true that I'm here in the 21st century and I can relate to some blue meme stuff, but does that mean I should start doing, you know, Judaic studies? I mean, people were doing that 2,000 years ago. It's not the cutting edge of my development as a human being going back to a tribal level and looking in that. And I would think that anybody in that would want to, you know, move ahead. And from the standpoint of anybody within an expression like that, if they really put their attention on the cutting edge of their development, that would illuminate to them what from the past had value to be brought ahead and what had to be left behind, because it was just myth and superstition and didn't make a lot of sense anymore. So I would never say there isn't any value in any of these individual cultural expressions, but I would say prior to all those cultural expressions, there's a oneness where we all meet prior to the emergence of any of that as consciousness. And then if we, at this level of development, holistic, integral, world-centric systems thinkers, if we all put our attention on the cutting edge of our development, we're also going to experience a oneness with each other. A oneness after all the complexity of cultural differentiation, because we will find that, in fact, the cutting edge is the same for all of us. The next step is the same for all of us. So this is the context for diagnosis. It's the context for treatment. The context is every human being who comes in is a vehicle for the evolution of consciousness. How awakened are they to that? How much integrity do they have with it? How much is it just some big idea, and how much are they actually living it? What are the thoughts and the emotions that they choose to put consciousness on instead of development? What are the ideas that they're strongly hooked into and identified with that are just illusory, that need to be sort of illuminated for what they are, which are just thoughts? Because most people spend their entire life behind the eight ball of some thought paired with some emotion, thinking that it's real. And there's never any substance to it at all. And I want to see in the diagnosis what evidence is there for the person's level of awareness of any of these things. And there are always two diagnostic streams coming. So behind them all, there's the fundamental realization, I know that's absolutely true. And then there's the person's ego, which is the momentum of resistance to preserve the past at any cost. And then there's the person's authentic self, which is the part of them that's willing to pay any price for more integrity. Right, so there are two streams of development. There's the fundamental reality behind everything, which is the oneness. And then there's two streams. The ego and its motivation is to avoid change at any cost, to preserve the past at any cost, to preserve self-image. And then there's the authentic self, and its motivation is that it's willing to pay any price to have more integrity. It just wants to carry us forward. More integrity, more integrity, more integrity. And my goal is to liberate the authentic self in people's consciousness, within the human being. And in the postmodern, green meme, pluralistic, egalitarian, holistic, integral, narcissistic human being, the first step to any of that is to awaken their own conscience. And that is synonymous with the reestablishment of the ability for their consciousness to perceive hierarchy. Because if you can't perceive hierarchy, then your attitude toward your own conscience, which is the voice of your own soul, it's the voice of the part of us that is striving toward the absolute. If we can't perceive hierarchy, then our attitude toward our own conscience is going to be, you have your truth and I have my truth. And the goals and the motives of the conscience, the voice of the soul, that guides us in a direction to merge with the absolute, to realize enlightenment and to live it, if we're going to make that exactly equivalent and equal to the fears and desires of our own ego, and then say, and I'm the one in between, and it doesn't matter what I choose because everything's equal and no one can judge me, then there's never going to be any development. And then you wind up with people with spiritual pretense who are a big mess. Even if they're leading teachers, they're a big mess. Because they haven't been willing to pay the kind of price one has to pay to renounce unwholesome motivations for the sake of the emergence of something that's actually greater. Because nothing's greater if there's no hierarchy. And the way you reinstitute hierarchy is to wake people up to their own conscience. And you do this by paying attention to the degree to which they're aware that there's a gap between what they're actually living and the highest that they've realized. So you have to have the diagnostic capability to recognize in every individual the highest truth that they've actually seen and they know is true in their own experience, and then all the ways they're not living up to that. And you have to simply and humbly and in the right time and the right place with whatever compassion you can muster, bring a person's own awareness to the nature of the gap and the size of the gap between what their self-image of themselves as a person with integrity in the face of the fact that they're espousing certain ideals and not living up to them in real time in the treatment room with you. Right in the conversation, right here, right now. So you say you want this, but you started out the sentence saying this, and you finished the sentence saying that. And they don't exist in the same world with each other. There's a fundamental contradiction. Can you see that? And some people will get very upset that you've pointed out that there's a fundamental contradiction or that there's a gap at all. So the conditioned response of postmodern human beings to having the nature of the gap between the highest that they've realized and what they're actually doing, when you point it out, the average response is narcissistic rage. Narcissistic rage. And the person will deride you, and from the perspective of non-judgment, what they will say is, you're filled with ego because you have pointed out their hypocrisy to them, and it's judgmental to have done that. So you have ego because they already know, this is cynicism, they already know that nobody has integrity and integrity is impossible. And you certainly don't. So all their hostility is likely to come up in your face. And then what you have to have a couple of attributes. One attribute is not to care, because you don't give a good, you know what, whether your patients like you or your friends like you or your kids like you or your family members like you. What you care more about is integrity and truth. So you're willing to pay a price, and you can have a deep ease of being. So while the person's throwing a complete narcissistic rage, you handle yourself with complete dignity. And you do not let their ego sugar your ego at all. So the goal in clinical practice is from the highest part of yourself that you're identified with and giving to, the patient's only ever going to get that. And you're only ever going to relate to that part of them as real. So it will turn out that with your patients and all people in your life, when any person is identified with the authentic self in themselves, you're going to feel immediate, absolute intimacy, trust, dignity, conviction, respect and self-respect, and connection to this person. And to the degree a person has turned their back on that, especially once you know they know it, prior to them knowing it, that's one thing. You have to have give people a lot of room. But once you know they've seen it, and they've espoused to you that they've seen it, and they've professed sometimes on bended knees with tears in their eyes the beauty of what they've seen, that's the basis of your relationship. So your relationship with people is progressive. What it means is that the basis and foundation for our relationship is always the highest that we know each other has seen. And that's the basis. And are we living up to that or aren't we living up to that? So in clinical practice, there should be a constant progression, because every single treatment, every week, every contact, and not just in practice but in life, every conversation, every time we get together, things have to go a little bit further and people have to have come along. So in the context of the class I'm giving here, if a practitioner in the class here isn't trying, if they're not progressing, if I don't see development in people, then there's a problem. It means a person isn't engaged. They're not on board. So in that context, how would I know someone was on board? Would I know it because I saw them walking down the street at lunch? Right? Because they'd be interacting with me. Because they'd be contributing. Because they'd be on the news group. And I'd say, I mean, so from a developmental and an evolutionary perspective, positive integral change is everything. And that means all lines of development are being brought along. A person's better able to articulate their experience. They're taking more responsibility for their experience. And then you know a person's really developing when they're contributing not just to voice their opinions and not just to show others how much they're developing, but when a person reaches a level of moral development where they feel responsible for the development of the whole, for everyone else. So like with the news group, is that my news group? Or is it our news group? And how much responsibility does any individual feel for really making something happen on it? You know, not just to contribute because it's cool, or not just to contribute because, boy, I'm learning a lot from this, but to contribute because you feel personally responsible for touching everybody on it for the biggest possible reasons, because it's your movement and you want to transform the medicine for the sake of transforming the world. And that's what's missing from our culture. We have all these individuals out there doing things, but how many people feel responsible for the outcome of the whole thing? Right? So all of this is the biggest possible context that I've arrived at for diagnosis and treatment. Human beings are vehicles for the evolution of consciousness. To what degree are they awakened to it? And the first step is to awaken the conscience. So a person can start respecting themselves because they're listening to the voice of their conscience and it becomes the guiding, motivating force in their own life. And the conscience is the part of them that's going to pull them to close the gap between where they're living and the highest they've seen out of a moral obligation, because the conscience is the voice of the soul and the soul is striving toward the absolute because it already knows that there's no separation between it and anyone else. And it knows, I'm in this life. In this lifetime, I have to realize the goal of liberation. In this lifetime, in this incarnation, in this vehicle. Not in some other vehicle at some other time, let someone else do it. But in this vehicle, in this incarnation now, my responsibility to what put me here is to first and foremost fulfill the goal of the highest aspirations in my own heart. And then when I've done that, you know, if I have a good practice, great. If I have a healthy vehicle, great. If I'm in a good love life and my kids are doing well, great. But if none of that's in place and I do this, I've at least done the most I could do. I at least took it seriously for the highest possible reasons.
This is when we would clap in church. I mean,
Well. Okay.